This is the theme of the Shir on Tazria Mitzora and the Kriya for Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, Tavshin Samach Tet. So we recognize that the deeper interconnection between Leda, Tzara'at, and Yetzira itself, which is the opening of the Parsha Yetzirato Shel Adam, is in the nature of the translation of information into reality, and came to see not only the connection between malignancy and birth, which was so taken as a simple, immediate understanding by Moshe and Aaron in the story of Miriam, but that appears here in the context of the Parsha, in the simple sense of the translation of the information of DNA, but also, as the Rabbeinu Bachya puts it in the most astonishing fashion, as the translation of the information of Bria across the process of creation itself. And there, all of the malignancy, or the malware that occurs in Maaseh Bereishis, becomes part of the waxing and waning of Hischatzus itself, just as DNA contains so much junk material. But in the deepest sense, the spreading of the idea of malignancy into Beged and Bayit represents as well Dawkins' extended phenotype, so that we can see the information as its kol, not only in the development directly of DNA itself, which is the kedusha that we have, which is the equivalent of Torah in Maaseh Bereishis, but also in the extension of the interaction of the Adam with the world around him, and the impact that it will have, therefore, upon that which is closest to him, the God of Beise, as part of the very description of his own Yetzirah and coming into being. So that what we live, that seems to be so much filled with emptiness and with dead space, is actually dealing with information in a davar be'itay matov. And any violation of that eight, including a violation of the stop coding and the let's wait coding and the time at which it becomes necessary to be mocked in the area, in which it now renews itself, is all part of the process of Shira, which is an Isha that is Yoledes in Kol Parshata Ibur, new processes, new ideas that keep coming round and round until we finally get to the ultimate Leda, which is the Leda of Geula itself, of which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ani Ashbir V'lo Olid, and we get to the final Shir, which no longer has in it the drive to keep the process going, but rather the experience of the immediacy of the fullness of creation. This is the review of the Shir on Parshas Tazria Mitzora, Shnat Tavshin Samach Tet, which was also Shabbat Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So the Parsha begins with the Yonim of Leida, Yishaki Tazria, V'yalda Zachar, and Rashi points out that the Yitzirato Shel Adam, he quotes here the Medrash, that in the same way that man is created after all of the Behema Chayav Of and Ma'aseh Bereishit, so too kach Torato nitpashachar Torat Behema Chayav Of. After having all of the dinim of Zotorat Ha'ola, Zotorat, and then the Zotorat Zevach Hashlamim, and then we have the dinim of the Torot of Behema, then we could start talking about what happens to an Adam, which everybody points out is a little bit strange, because obviously the inyonim of the Torah began with Adam. I mean, we've had all of the dinim and all of the mishpatim even before we began thinking about a mishkan. We've been dealing with Adam, not with Behema. We switched for a little while because we were talking about the mishkan, so we started talking about Behema. So how do you say that it comes at the very end? Now, if we take a look, however, at the inyonim of the parasha that we read for Parashat HaChodesh, and the changes that happen because of Shabbat, of the parasha that comes out of Rosh Chodesh, we see two very interesting things. The Haftorah itself in Yeshayahu speaks about Leida, as if Leida is fundamentally related to the union of Rosh Chodesh. So there the Navi says, B'term Tachu Yulada, B'term Yavo Chevela, V'im Lita Zachar, So the process of Geula, we compare now to Leida. If you take a look at the Tefillah that we change in the Tefillah to Musafim for Rosh Chodesh, the Tefillah begins with Atayetzarta, Talam Chamiketa. And obviously this is what Rashi is stressing, Kishem Shiyetzirato Shel Adam. So when we talk about the moon and the cycles of the moon, we, for some reason, refer back to Yetzira. And that is obviously what Rashi is talking about over here. Not the dinim of Adam, but those things that are nogea, the Yetzira of Adam. Not the dinim of Behema, but the dinim of Behema that are nogea, Yetzira. So that which has to do with the coming into being, which is what the Navi is referring to here, Hayuchal. Yuchal is Chalot. Coming into being. Coming into being, yes, as a reference to the cycles of the moon. And indeed, we find that the reproductive cycles themselves are tied to the moon. Menstrual cycle is tied to the moon. The concepts that have to do with all of the relationship to reproduction are tied, they're tied here really to the moon, because the way that the Gemara puts it in Brachot is indeed the cycles of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship to us are directly connected to the moon. B'chol parshiyota ibur. But more than that, what it strikes us as being an anomaly, which is the relationship of the Leda in the Parsha, which is entirely natural and normal and good and what we look forward to in terms of creativity, to be tied in the Torah to two full parshas almost of inyanim, of bad things, things which are destructive, right? The malignancies that we speak about in terms of tzaraat is very strange. And yet that same Gemara relates indeed anger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Atam mitmale evra Kiisha ubara bepo kol parshiot ibur. You're angry at us. Nonetheless, you should be merachim on us throughout all of these cycles of pregnancy. It's very, very weird. That everything about the moon is always referred to in terms of Leda. The chodesh that's meubar, the molad of the month, the giving birth now, which we have over here. Yeah.
Let me ask a question for clarification. In the plain sense of the thing, if pregnancy were tied to the moon, everyone would have their, every woman would have their period at the same time of the cycle. I think it's tied to the period of the moon, but not
yeah,
to the moon.
Yeah, to the periodicity of the moon. But that's what exactly what the Gemara is referring
to.
Is the period.
Yeah.
It's not metaphorical. It isn't metaphorical. It's actually the body has developed in such a way that the hormonal cycle is linked to the periodicity of the moon. You know, as to where directly, I mean, that, you know, I mean, cycles can be linked to pheromones, they can be linked to your roommate, you know, and they get linked to all kinds of things, but the periodicity itself, the natural periodicity, is a lunar cycle, which is why the, among other reasons, which is why feminism has taken the moon, or femininity throughout is always linked to the moon. We, all of the ancient visions of the woman are lunar visions. I mean, in the Torah, it's a vision of an Isha. But, in any event, so getting back now to our sugya, so that means that the issue over here that Rashi is referring to specifically to in terms of Yetzira is something that itself is linked to the moon, and of course the presence of the moon in the process of Yetzira is fundamental to understanding the whole nature we spoke about last week of the interrelationship of the Shnei Ha'Maorot HaGdolim, which became changed into the Maor HaGadol and Maor HaKatan, becomes now symbolic of the entire problem of femininity, the interrelationship of sources of energy, the reflection of energy, and so on, which becomes part of the klolos of Gan Eden. Afterwards, the Yim Shobach, we understand that that's clearly linked to reproduction, as it is in Gan Eden itself. But what isn't at all clear is why the Yetzirah over here would have to do with the Karbonites. I mean, we certainly don't talk about the Tzaraas of animals. So why are we linking the Torah of the Behema Chayav Ov, which here is a Torah of Karbonites, to Yetzirah Tor Shel Adam? That's not clear. Nor is it at all clear why we would link Leida, which is, again, a healthy process, I was about to bring out, to the idea of Tzaraas, which is a disaster and a breakdown. And so the clear meaning of the Medrash here that Rashi is quoting is that the very fact of Yetzirah being in an order in which you have Behema Chayav Of culminating in Adam forces us to link Karbonis to that idea. Karbonis themselves are an expression of the Seder of Maaseh Bereishis in which Adam follows Behema Chayav Of. That's what it's saying. And therefore the Yetzirah of Adam, elements of his Yetzirah, will also follow that Torah of Behema Chayav Of. Why? So clearly what Rashi is saying here is that the fact that it's possible to bring a karbon only makes sense because the Torah presents Adam as the culmination of an evolutionary process. If Adam were not put in the Torah as the end result, but rather was somewhere in there, there'd be no way that he could bring korbanos. Because the nature of bringing a korban is to present the Mizbeach as being that which subsumes all of the complexity in the Bria. So that when Adam is at the top of a chain, which is how it's presented now in Maaseh Bereishis, and we don't view evolution as being simply a bush, but it becomes a tree with a direction whose result is not simply survival, but whose direction is increased complexity. It's because of that idea that one has a right and meaning in presenting a korban as that which takes your place in the Mizbeach. But ultimately, the introduction of korbanos, as we saw last week, is the Mizbeach eating Adam, which is not of Aviv. It's just that we present now a replacement for Adam, so that we view the world as having the direction in which that which is more complex lives off of that which is less complex, and that provides a direction to Maaseh Bereishis of increasing complexity, which the carbon brings out is meant to result in a recognition of Yichud Hashem, which all is presented to the Toreif of the Mizbeach, which becomes now the predator that absorbs all complexity. So that it all goes back to Yichud Shem Shammai. Since that's an expression of Yetzirah, therefore the Torah that has to do with Yetzirah is now placed immediately after that. So we've discussed the level of basar, of animal, the life force of animal. Now let us come to discuss the level of life force and basar of humans. That's why we begin to discuss not only reproduction, but as the Zohar points out, Isha ki tazriya, which means the process of reproduction. It's not just the fact of birth. The Torah here focuses on germ cells. So it talks about the tazriya at the beginning from the point of view of a woman, and talks about tazriya at the very end of Mitzorah, sandwiches in the weirdest way, tzaras between germ cells. So you have Isha ki tazriya, and then we have the whole end of the parsha that refers to Isha ki etzev imenu shechvat zara, with all of the dinim, tumas zera, zav, the actual tumah of intercourse, which doesn't come from contact with shechvat zera, so that the interrelationship of the initial reproductive cells is important to understanding the nature of tzaraat here. That's a remarkable statement. When we take a look at the fact that in the classic case of the impact of tzaraat, which of course is Miriam, and that's the tzaraat we're supposed to remember what happened to Miriam. That classic case immediately interrelates the Tzara'at of Miriam to birth. Al na tehi kamet, asher b'tzeito mirecha nimo, atocha chatzi b'saro. Strangest thing. Let her not be as a dead person who upon exiting a mother's womb has half of its flesh sloughed away. What in the world is that supposed to mean? Why is that the immediate relationship to Leda? That means that there's a primal connection between the concept not simply of Leda, or if we take a closer look at what happens in the Haftarah, it's also not about Leda. It's about the process of a Leda. Hayuchal. Hanochi Ashbir Velo Olid. It's not the actual Leda. It's the process of Leda that we're talking about. Wait, I'm afraid of getting off the thing. My memory's not good enough. Which means that what we're looking at over here is, as Rabbeinu Bachya says, fantastic choice of topics. His topic is speech. Now, the pashtus of why his topic is speech, which is simcha la'adam b'ma'aneh piv, he chooses. People are happy when they're able to speak well. V'davar be'ito mato. This is the pasuk that he quotes. So why that? People are very happy at being able to articulate themselves. Great. What does that have to do with the parasha? So normally, your immediate response is, well, we know why it is that you get tzara'at, because the Gemara says you get tzara'at for speaking lashon hara. And therefore, he talks about the unanimity of speech. But it's very strange. That's not the speech that he focuses on at all. He talks about something entirely different. In fact, he talks about Yetzira and speech. That God creates the world through words. That's odd. That the interrelationship of Tzara'at and Lashon Hara is astonishingly recognized in the development of language as being part of Yetzirah. Why? To speak Lashon Hara is to malign. Tzara'at is malignancy. The word malign and malignancy are both interrelated to Maaseh Bereishis, because what it means is mel genesis, which is evil creation, which is the makar of evil in Gan Eden, which is actually Dibora, but which now becomes expressed. How the heck does anybody know that in Latin? How did that become part of English? That is astonishing. So it means we understand there's something about the nature of speech, which he now relates to my separations itself, which is Yetzira, Genesis, Dibor, Davar Be'ito Matov, as the pasuk ends, and malignancy. All interrelated. Cancer. The word, the modern word for cancer, is from our parsha. Because we talk about the idea of man eret. Tzarat man eret. It's a gidul man ir. So that the modern word for cancer itself is taken directly from tzaras, the destruction of functional cells by cells growing out of control, not performing that function. Once that's true, the relationship to speech becomes very, very clear in a much deeper way. And it's the way that Rabbeinu Bachya is bringing out. Because when he says, davar bi'ito matov, he says, speech is all very nice. You're taking information. And now you're able to bring it out into the world through articulation, which is the mode of creation. But, davar bi'ito matov, you have a great speech. So here's this rabbi. He brings an example. This rabbi has this brilliant speech. He's got to go to two weddings and a funeral. And he mixes up the speech. He takes out the wedding speech at the funeral and the funeral speech at the wedding. Right? Everybody thinks the man's out of his mind. They're going to lock him up. He says, what do you mean I'm saying a great speech? But it's not a davar b'yito. I mean, it's in the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong context. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, that in a deeper sense is the nature of creation. Simcha le'ish, zeh kadosh baruch hu, b'ma'aneh piv, v'yomer Elohim yihi or, v'yihi or. Vayar Elohim et Or Ki Tov. But, continues the Pasuk, as Rabbeinu Bachya is masbir, Yadua, Ki B'sheshet Yemei Bereshit Kol V'yom, Yom, Kol Yom V'yom Min Hashisha. You have new developments, and on each one of them, Yizkir Ki Tov. Tavar B'ito Ma Tov. What does that mean? We are now looking at the expression of the information that's included in the original Or, and we see it spread out over time in a process which results in a product. The process and the product are insufficiently well connected to the original Ma'amar unless you have a Kodesh Baruch Hu looking at it and saying, this is good. Which means that, in fact, there's room for malignancy. Otherwise, you don't need Vayar Elohim Ki Tov. And that's Tzoras. Leida and Tzoras are fundamentally interrelated to anyone intelligent because they immediately recognize whatever Leida is, it is an insanely complex expression of information that is condensed into one molecule. And it doesn't matter whether you understand that, whether you've actually been aimed on the way that that information is contained in DNA or you're not. But you recognize that wherever you have a process that takes information and needs to translate it, missing a dover be'ito is a disaster. So in other words, DNA is not linear information. You can't sit there and say, okay, click, and here comes a Vlad. What you're doing is this profound interrelationship of the information with the environment that triggers the responses. And then the acting upon the environment has changed the environment so that now the next translation of a protein is going to be acting in a completely different way than it would have a moment before, so that the strand of DNA is filled with stops and starts waiting for responses from the environment, triggering now the next transcription, and so on. This is insane. So it means that anything that busts during that process is no longer Dover B'ito Ma'atov. I said, what do you mean? But it was the same information. Great. It was the same information, so now he's got a hand coming out of his belly button. That's really beautiful. It was the same information, and now he's got a third eye in the middle. These are serious things, right? And it's the same information, but more subtle problems. Yes, it's the same information, and yet at age 35, something goes wrong with the ability to utilize a particular enzyme. How did that happen? And yet it's genetic. Why did it take that long? The one thing, you see, refuah. These are very strange things, because generally when it comes to medicine, the Torah tells you go to the doctor. Here we come to Tzoras, tells you go to the Kohen. Go back to Yetzirah. Why? Because if you consider all of the conundrums of medicine, they're mostly technology issues. Because we know exactly what needs to be done to keep a heart going for 1,000 years and to keep a circulatory system working. We don't have the technology to do it. But what the problems are clear. There's a lot of subtlety, but you know the direction that you have to go. When it comes to cancer, you are working with things that are madly complex. Because there you're working with information gone haywire in terms of its interrelationship with the environment. It's not enough to say, I know genetic codes that will cause cancer. Yeah? So how come they only do it sometimes? Yeah? So how come sometimes it's exposure to this chemical and sometimes it's exposure to this stress? And how come in this organism it happens immediately and in this organism it takes 30 years? And how do you know that? I mean, the number of factors and the interrelatedness of the factors is so complex that the attempt to control cancer is right now on the level of witch doctors. Which is, you know, try to poison the organism, poison the cancer. Right? It's insane. It's a completely different order of medicine in which you need to come to an understanding not only of the coding of information, but the mode by which that information becomes affected by its interrelationship with the environment. So that Leida and Tzoras are completely linked in an intelligent person's brain. Because when you see the skin going cancerous, and it's visible. And you understand that the processes that normally take care of themselves are now malignant. You are looking at birth gone awry, information gone awry. So it's clear that these two things are one and the same thing. The moment Aaron sees Miriam, I mean, he's not a primitive. My God, what you're looking at is something that is meant to be perfect because it works so often. What a terror to see a child born out of the womb as a thalidomide baby. Don't let her be like that. That touches on the underlying pain of things gone bad in Yetzirah itself. Therefore comes along the Rabbi Nobachia to say, it's not, let's not simplify. When you say a person speaks Lashon Hara, the element of Lashon Hara is cancer. That's what it's about. Because what happens in a beautiful way, the Medrash puts it, stunning, literally turns tzaras into a punishment for acting yourself as a cancer. It says, what does tzaras come from? The Medrash. What does tzaras come from? Someone who is nichnas l'tchum she'eno shelo. You go into somebody else's area, you are a cancer, you get cancer. Brings Uriah from Uziel. Uziel makes himself a coin. Hey, buddy, that's not you. Turns cancerous on the spot, right? So you see that this idea of tzaras is linked to not having your place within the organism of creation, which means that the ultimate information gone awry or the essence of evil in the act of creation is the nature of process that by definition is tinged with problems. Process, taking information and making it happen, is tinged with problems. This, by the way, has profound implications for feminism and for the entire idea of the way the Rabbi Nobachia is linking all process to what we see in the moon. So it's in the same way that basically you have waxing and waning during a period of process. Time is linked in our minds to waxing and waning. So is DNA. You analyze DNA, it's almost entirely junk. It doesn't code for any proteins. And it used to be thought that it really is junk. There was so much information that wasn't usable in the process of evolution when more information was added, previous pieces just become useless or repetitious. So you could really cut it down. It's very different. Then it became clear that a lot of that junk is built in pauses for the translation of information, or it's information to stop, to wait. Then it becomes, the junk becomes part of waiting for an environment that has developed to the point that the information is usable. You try to express it, shelo davar be'ito. It brings the molecule has to include the davar be'ito. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's no words, Parshat, for the Ruach HaKodesh that goes into seeing that. That this is davar be'ito matov, linked to my separatius. This becomes the yitzira and the atah yetzarta in the tefillah of Rosh Chodesh itself, right? The impact for feminism is so astounding because it relates to the Gemara that says that la'atid lavo, the song that we sing at Geula, which of course is what the Yeshayo is referring to, is Geula, is the ultimate Leda. So the song that we sing at that Geula is called Shir Chadash. All of the other songs that we sing during the process is called Shira. It's a very strange Gemara. Why is it called Shira? Because it's like a female. Just like a female gives birth, every Geula creates problems. What? What is it? Because a female gives birth, I mean, that's creative. So too, every Geula gives problems. But once you see it this way, you understand the nature of the female throughout history was the recognition of the waxing and waning of history. So that what I need to do, my focus, is on the renewal of the next stage of the process. So this was the end of the beginning. We need a new beginning. There's this constant chiddush of Rosh Chodesh in which, let's try this again, because we're dealing with a heuristic process that keeps spiraling forwards in a waxing and waning fashion. And sometimes it's bad, and sometimes it's good, and sometimes we're waiting. And that's why innately it involves problems. Because in the same way that Genesis involves malgenesis, birth involves tzaras. That's exactly what we're saying. As we get closer and closer to Geula, the sexes become more and more the same. Because what happens is, like this, in the process where you're trying to establish something as it is now, that's the male with his ideas of doing things and getting it right. I've always got the answer to the problems. I'm always going to have a new vision. And this is, right, the revolution. We have it right. Now, plan number 17B, subsection 3, this is definitely the right one. Meanwhile, the woman is busily making preparations for the next generation because this is going to be another screw-up by these idiots. And that distinction is so powerful that it defines your entire psychology. As you come closer and closer to a period of actual geula, the female is no longer thinking about let's get it right at some time in the future. It's basically now or never. There's that sense in which the female doesn't want to be not involved in the now, because the feeling is, you know what? The now is what we have, and it's got to be right. And therefore, there's a movement towards the male. So that there's a tremendous sense of, why in the world does the male have anything? The deeper connection to the creativity is us. And now it's no longer creativity for the future. It's creativity for the final laydown. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch was saying over here. If she's already sitting, Anochi Ashbir V'lo Olid, she's already sitting on the birth stool, obviously this is it. Let's not talk about anything else. In the same sense, the male is no longer thinking about plan number 17B. He's thinking about the end of the process of creation, in which case he has to be involved in the later. And it's amazing how psychologically this has changed. I mean, used to be men would never be involved in later. They were stuck outside in a room somewhere and a nurse would come out. I mean, this all changed literally in 100 years. Right? So 100 years ago, women got the vote. 100 years ago, women didn't have to change their name if they wrote a book. Some people think it was a male who wrote the... I mean, this not even 100 years ago. These are gradual changes. 50 years ago, it wasn't even 50, 40 years ago, some men were allowed in to be part of a birth. 30 years ago, men started experiencing being pregnant when a woman... and started saying, we're pregnant. 20 years ago, women started wanting to be rabbis. I mean, it's amazing, this accelerating process in which people that are born now think this is normal and something was wrong with people until now. But that's not the point. Nothing was wrong with anybody. Part of this process is that it goes towards Shira, away from Shira. But it was evident that the element of Shira was not a silly relationship. Well, okay, birth means something new, and therefore Shira means problems. By definition, it's problems. That's the relationship of Leda to Tzaras. It's a remarkable thing. I mean, Mamish, watch the world changing in front of you. Well, everybody's psychology is changing. So this now becomes the interrelationship of Karbanas as a process for Maisa Bereishis that end up in the complexity of Adam, that ends up in a world of ultimate complexity that now is able to be Megala Yichud Hashem and Malchus Shamayim. It's fantastically powerful when it's seen in terms of Atoya Tzarta. Unbelievable. But there's one problem. It's a problem that the Rambam points out. This is all very nice when you're talking about the translation of information. What does that have to do with Tzaras HaBeged and Tzarat HaBayit? I mean, that's not translation of information. I mean, it just sort of happens. The Rambam points this out. He says, the truth is, a Tzarat is Shem Amur B'Shutafut. Golil Inyanim Arbei. Shem Domim Zalazet. The word Tzarat seems to be used as a borrowed term. because it refers to different phenomena that are not really similar in essence. And when it comes to that aspect, where we have all of these issues of the bayit and the beged, those things seem to be outside of the idea of yetzira. They're not part of karbanos, and they're not part of the way in which the information of the Adam himself is translated. Let me get to the point. Afterwards, come to the question. What? The Rambam? Hatzarat b'shutafut. And so, the amazing thing is that it's only in the last decades that the solution to what the Torah is trying to say here has become evident. And it was articulated. The one who articulated the solution is Dawkins. What Dawkins pointed out in a concept called the extended phenotype is that we have had a very, very simplistic view of evolution. Because we've been concentrating on DNA. But DNA is built not of genetic processes, but of the interaction of genetic processes with an environment. The problem is that the information in the DNA changes the environment. Therefore, it can't be looked at as something alone. DNA changes environment. How does it change environment? Well, as he points out, a bird develops that now has to build a house. But in building the house, he changes the rainforest. A bacteria develops that lives on methane, but has a waste product called oxygen. The entire earth changes. Now, obviously, the DNA of organisms that are going to be breathing this oxygen are going to be part of a history of life in which we need to understand how that early DNA acted upon the planet as a whole to make it something which now exerted pressure on the development of genes that are now have an entirely new way of extracting energy and need to develop whole processes for it, and so on and so forth. But that means you create humans, the DNA of humans. They change everything. So as Ben Zoma says, now the whole planet is making these suits. Think of what Adam HaRishon had to go through to get that suit. And now you click on a mouse the next morning. Mamish says this, it's unbelievable. Click on the mouse. He says, I put it in order, and the entire planet comes to my doorstep the next morning. I mean, the vision of FedEx and the internet, to find in Chagiga, to talk about having a planet at your fingertips 2,000 years ago. Wow, it's awesome. Right? It's marish. That's what Gemara says. He got up, he's standing there watching tens of thousands of people coming into the Beit HaMikdash, and he says, thank the good Lord who created all of these people to work for me. Because basically, anybody who clicks on a mouse has an entire planet working for them. You've got a suit that is an expression of 100 million man-hours, really, of development, machinery, labor, of actual agriculture, of product design. Millions and millions of people put their lives into that suit. And you got it for $200 delivered to your front door. It's not to be believed. It really is. It's mad if you think about it. For Adam HaRishon to do that would have taken a lifetime. Try to get Adam HaRishon an Yves Saint Laurent suit. And he actually lists, think about what he went through, to get something primitive to wear. And what would you go through to get something finer and to develop the machinery for a complex weave? And how long would it take you to develop the computers that would run the machinery that could be the type of weaves that we're used to? Think about that. And so on and so forth. The genetic engineering for the type of plants that develop the type of cotton. And think about that. You're talking about generations of human toil that is yours at the click of a mouse. Fantastic. Okay. So therefore, points out Dawkins, ultimately, information is not stuck in genetic material. The information is a complex linkage between everything that has happened on this planet and the way in which it may be recorded in genes, but is always going to be able to be found in the byproducts, which need to be seen as an extension of that information. You cannot conceive of a human if you don't take into consideration the fact that he wears clothes. You cannot conceive of a human if you don't take into consideration the fact that he has a house, which requires fuel, which uses energy. That's what a human being is. He's not an organism that. He is the organism that includes that extension of himself. With that articulation of the nature of the information, it now becomes clear why the Torah would include beget, bayit, fundamental, primal extensions of the human organism into the ultimate impact of the misuse of information. You think, and this goes back to the original warning to Adam Rishon, you think that you're speaking something wrong and it doesn't really matter. And I tell you that the end result is you can forget about your world. Wow. That's amazing, right? Take a look at this world. And what does he point out about the world? Kama na'e umitukanu. Look how everything is in its place. Functional. You can easily destroy that functionality by destroying the system. The thing that destroys the system is cancer. Whether it's a cancer that you see in a biological system, or it's cancer that you see in an economic system, or it's cancer that you see in a social system. The moment you go into an area in which you're no longer functional, you're taking over cells that are not yours, and you're not doing their job. You're going to destroy the system. So you've got an idea. You're going to make money, but not produce. That's your idea. You're going to destroy the system. In the end, the whole thing will come crashing down. And you're wrong to think that the extension into the planet as a whole is not as exquisitely sensitive as the DNA that is being expressed in a pregnant woman is to thalidomide. It's exactly as sensitive. And the end result is going to be an economic system that doesn't have arms or legs. That's the end result. And a social system that's going to leave people out, that's going to create tensions that will ultimately destroy the whole system. There is no way to build genesis through malgenesis. That's the bottom line. Therefore, comes along the Rabbeinu Bachya to say, that's really the essence of the parasha. If you take a look now at the structure, and now he, after saying davar v'ito matov, he points out the way in which complexity always comes last. So you note, everything actually was nivra berega achat. All the information was there the first instant of creation. But, the fact is, and that's the matter, she says, mashal le'ikar, it's like a farmer. A farmer who's doing organic farming. What does he do? He takes different species, he'll plant them all at the same time, but he knows this thing is going to blossom at this particular point, which will provide protection for the thing that will blossom at the next point, which will provide food for animals that eat low-growing grasses, but won't destroy the grasses that are growing higher, and vice versa. See, it's all planted. Put it all to the ground at one moment. But kol echad v'echad ofir b'yomo. Everything comes out at the right time, in the right place, and it's all a system. So you say, but all the information was there up front. So what does that have to do with anything? The whole point is to know. The more you know, the more you understand. It's amazing they were able to find metaphors for things that to us are so much more complex. But it's clear, the idea becomes perfectly clear. So he says, you take the original energy, you take that or. So, mina or shayab rishon ben Ibrahim, it's all there. But everything is created out of there. Be'ito haro'ilo. And now, the last thing, she'll say, so the last thing, that's a byproduct. On the contrary. since it's a process, an evolutionary process, the last thing is taking advantage of everything that evolved before. So therefore, he says, Lo yachro lechesaron, kim legdula v'mala. Because the more along the development is, then the more complexity is able to be taken advantage of for the later development. Exactly the opposite of a primitive point of view, a mechanical point of view, in which the byproducts are what's left after you're doing things in a very gross fashion. Yeah, so you use the best material up front, and then what's left is the junk. That's for mechanics. But for informational processes, it's exactly the opposite. It takes a tremendous amount of time. Maybe you're writing computer programs. It takes decades to have little modules you could just plug in that have already been developed and used. Imagine what it would take. I mean, you can't even conceive of writing something like a complex program unless people have already spent decades and hundreds of millions of man-hours with little modules. I wanted to, okay, just plug that in, fine. Okay, so that's now a subroutine there. That does all your stuff. Okay, now let's get back to what I want. I don't even think about how the subroutine works, even though the subroutine might take up literally, millions and millions of bytes of information. I didn't even think about that. When you're dealing with information at that level, says Rabbi Rubakia, then obviously the later products are the real products. So now he gets through davar, you understand how the whole thing becomes one, gets through davar v'ito matov, back to the opening Rashi. That if you're talking about yetzira, which is the expression of information, so then kishem shi yetzirato shel adam, that's the whole point. If Adam is the last product, then that means that we're talking about the highest level of informational density and complexity. Now therefore, it goes on to say, the same thing would be true. Shabbos is an expression of sheshes yamim. Olam Haba, coming after Olam Hazeh, the total information, this is really the crux of the matter. Yetzira, the total information of the world of process, which is the world in which we live, is what's utilized for the creation of a universe of Olam Haba. That's his vision. That's stunning. The total information that's used in the life that we see developing, evolving, historically, socially, technologically, within ourselves, and over the entire period of the thousands of years of human history, the 6,000 years that is given of human history to develop, all of that is the readout of the initial information in Maisa Bereishis from the point of the complexity that is Adam onwards. So you say, it's filled with junk. You're right. So is DNA. But that junk is part of the molecule of information. That junk codes for the problems. But the problems are part of the heuristic solution, which is the whole point of evolution. You're translating a DNA molecule and you're saying, can't we just throw out the junk and be efficient about this? Idiot! The junk is part of the design. So that means that what you see as periods of horror and of junk and of terror and things going wrong are that which is required for the ultimate outgrowth of the information that's required. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you think, I'm a nut? Anochi Ashbir? Lo lid. So the idea of Ki Chalav Yaldat Tzion, so Tzion is sitting there saying, gosh, where did all this come from? Oy vavoy, what an idiot. I mean, where did all this come from? Vanochi Galmuda. Please. What do you think has been happening for the past 2,000 years? You think it's a waste of time? You think the Galut was just there because we didn't get around to a Gula? That's the point of Shira. So the new problems that are created are part of the generative process itself. And the mistakes that you see are the misuse of information that, in the ultimate sense, become part of, and this is what Rebbe cried about. He says, it's just horrific. You look around at life, and you see some people's entire life is usable. Yeshkan olam acharei kamashani. And you see, Yeshkan olam b'sha'achas. They live a life that's completely useless. And then there's this one moment that they use. And that's enough to give them a lifetime. But it's just like, it's such a tragedy that there's so much that could be, and there's so much that's available. And it's just like, we just go through this, and we think that it's nothing. We think that this is junk DNA, and that we understand that it's nothing. And so too, well, we get up, and we have 99% of our lives, and we say, Yemei Chayenu Hevel, and it's all a waste of time, and it isn't going anywhere, and isn't doing anything. And look at our history, up and down, the same ridiculous cycle, exactly, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the tefillah for Rosh Chodesh. It's the same ridiculous cycle. But the ridiculous cycle is always Hitchatshut. And it's always a step of utilizing now more complex information that has gone through more heuristic processes, that it offers you new creativity and new possibilities. Looking back at my separations as a whole, that level of Yetzirah that we talk about in Atayat Tzarta, Olam HaMikedem, going all the way back to my separations, that gives you a vision of what the true Leda is and what the true nature of Geula is, which means a person can sit back and think that his life is a waste. But in the same way that you're a fool to take a chance and sitting in a room, you're a dentist, you say, I'm going to get out of the room every time I want to take an x-ray. Come on. How much harm can come of an x-ray? You're a fool. How much harm can come of not putting on my tefillin for one day? What's going to happen? You're a fool. Because you're dealing with things you know nothing about subtleties whose impact is just beyond your range of informational sensitivity. And therefore, looking at it in that sense, you want to see what goes wrong with one x-ray hitting one atom in a molecule that consists of millions of arranged lattices and so on? Nebuch, take a look at what happened just from that one mistake. Be a little bit more careful, maybe, with information. Once you look at Olam Hazeh as information rather than mechanics, the entire picture changes. Then it becomes a Dover Be'itei Matov. And Dover Be'itei Matov is a Zman of Tefillah, a Zman of Kriya Shema. What's the difference? I'd have it later, I'd have it earlier. What's the difference? Saying the funeral speech at the wedding, it's the same speech. What's the difference? That's the primitiveness of such thinking. Whereas the recognition of the nature of life as developing information leaves you sitting in awe of what it is that's coming your way to do in a particular moment. Then you know what you're up against. And that's what malignancy shows you about the nature of birth and the nature of speech, the nature of human understanding. Okay, I think that was basically the idea.
That was
amazing.
Wow.
That is amazing.
Wow. Was very different to Shabbos.
What's that?
Completely different to Shabbos. You didn't bring this out. It's
a different
Shabbos.
That's what we're talking about, is evolution.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
A zinger, yeah. He says, I hear there wasn't much of a shear, so I didn't miss
it. No, we only have just a 15-minute shear.
No, they say the convert had to go to Shammai first and get what you think he wants.
There we go. Go ahead. I need to know.
Seriously, we'll see.
It's the difference between
Shabbos shear.
Yeah. So the major difference between Shabbos and this shear was that on Shabbos the questions were development of questions, whereas today was a development of a structure of ideas. On Shabbos, it was the development of human nature and how the development of a human being develops in his understanding. And it becomes quite clear very quickly how important it is for a person to develop and a person to understand. Whereas the big question came, how does this affect Begodim? Like, how does that even affect? How do you even think that? Today's share, you had a sense of how that could develop into Begodim because you had a sense of context in that. Obviously, if creation had things around, obviously that was affecting. Whereas on Shabbos, I had no sense that was coming. It was like a blockbuster question. It was this is what, and no idea what the answer was going to be.
Yeah.
Also, hearing Shabbos obviously then made a difference that I knew what was coming. But even the share of development was a different development.
Well, maybe he was reacting to last night's discussion of giving us signals beforehand what's coming, and that's why he changed today.
Yeah, but even then, I still think it wasn't as defined today. Like what you were saying about defining what was coming, there were definitions, but there were not clear distinctions in today's show as to the development. It was mushed a little bit together as the development of the structure of the show.
So
it should be parsed more. I think so. More of a defining question. I mean, on Shabbos, a major question was the Zohar's question of Tazria to labor. Like, why are we even talking about conception? Why are we even beginning to talk about conception? Whereas it's all later, it's all about what happened, and now we're talking about. Today was sort of the development of the idea without the question of what's going on here, because conception. Shabbos, that was the major question.
I thought he answered that.
It was all in today's shir. I'm not saying it wasn't in today's shir. What I'm saying is that Shabbos was more of a defining question. Why are we talking about conception? What has that got to do with anything? But yeah, the question wasn't as strongly developed. It was
because
more the discussion that was
the end is in the beginning.
Correct. But it was more given as the answer was given throughout the discussion, not let me ask you guys a question here. What is this doing? It was more a development of that structure of the question. That's
supposed to start with you with that.
With the serious thinking of what the development of the ideas.
He said there are two processes. There's benign growth and there's malignant growth. And that's not actually in the beginning. That has to do with the interaction between the protoplasm and the environment. And that if you get something out of place or out of time, then it'll be malignant and everything will come out sick. If you're asking a question and I'm not responding to, then I don't understand.
I'm not asking a question. What I'm doing is I'm trying to define the difference between the Shabbos share and today's share. So on Shabbos, the questions are more defined as Tazria to later, to conception to later. Today's share, the development of the structure was coming out as the process, whereas on Shabbos was a massive bombshell question. And we were hit with that question as to, and it was the development of that. Today the question was.
Was there any difference in the general direction?
No, definitely no difference in that general direction. Difference in the way it was structured. On Shabbos, what I'm saying is that the questions were powerful. They were powerful questions, and then we were thinking, whoa, what's going to happen here? Whereas today, answers were given during the discussion of the question.
Yeah,
the
Zohar
question
I,
as opposed to as
I always
discussion.
Struggle with that. You know, people say, I personally like Drem.
Right, you did that
and
on Shabbos.
Here, I like Drem.
Right.
But people say they don't really understand Drem. Because they get confused. Like, I don't understand the answer. It's not a question. So, but the review is always more.
It was the development of ideas.
It's not meant to be dramatic.
Right.
It's a review. It's meant to be just the context.
Yeah, but what we're saying with
it's hard to regenerate a shear.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so do the theme?
One sec. Two things. Just during the share, I was thinking about the one product that we have that we use as real kedusha, we have its own bracha, is wine. And wine is exactly that element of if you get it, one. If you grow it and you put the water on the wrong day and you pick it on the wrong time and you get it on the wrong time. And I asked you this question, I think 2 years ago, I said to you, I mean, if we're talking about a drink here, why don't we have a special brocha for whiskey?
Why don't we?
Why don't we have a special brocha for whiskey? That's always been like a big thing for me. We're having something which is unique, something special, something which is also, you know, drinking, also as far as...
It doesn't interrelate.
It doesn't interrelate in this idea of... Yeah, yeah. But
so that's why he dies. It's called wine.
Wine. But in terms of context of this shir, you can understand it perfectly. In terms of if you get whiskey wrong, you can recreate a bottle of whiskey again and again and again, exactly the same taste. You can never recreate the same bottle of wine ever. And that's the interrelation
God. That's what God means. God means interrelation with the environment.
So I thought that would have been very nice in terms of an idea of a product that we use, and that's how we sanctify and make
it relates to the same Lashon Hara by separation.
Right.
It was the Lashon Hara, the Nachash became wine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does it have to be shoulder by Nachash so that it's protected from anything else?
Anything that I have shoulder by Nachash that means protect, that means it takes into consideration all the taste of it.
One more question. One more thing.
Shamur doesn't mean protected. It means much more than that. It's like Mishka doesn't mean Shmir, it doesn't mean Mishka to protect it.
Cherish. But it's all the process happening within the
there's no reason for you to view it as protection. That's not the point. That's not the essential meaning.
I sort of know the answer, but at the end of the shir when we're discussing, you don't know what you want to davening at the wrong time and how that affects, but people then often fall into a mechanical way of we're doing it because we're doing it, but no real meaning to it, and then you fall into a robot type off-road environment because you're doing that, and then you feel it's important to not fall out of it, but it has no meaning. Then there's a fine line fence there where you're doing it because you know the impact on the world, but you're also doing it and knowing the context.
Right, but those two things are interrelated. The impact is much lessened in rote. It becomes more of a sustaining issue rather than part of a process issue.
Right, but how do we make sure what
it's a different topic completely.
Fall off the
it relates to Rosh Chodesh as well.
Right.
Because it's the Chodesh part, that is the non-rote.
Right.
The Chodesh part is
keeping
the
things Chodesh.
Created experience for the first time if something is new. So that it's novelty. It's always novelty.
We discussed that show.
Yeah. And that too is part of the same idea. Yeah. That process always has to have within it renewal or it ceases to be a process.
Real renewal.
That's the appeal of the power of the new moon and the Rabba Munatacha Chadashim Labakarim.
Yeah, that was the final bracha to the Chasim.
Yeah.
כשיעקב מברך הוא אומר ככוכבי השמיים חשבתי למה זה דווקא ככוכבי השמיים כי זה גם קשור לירח שהירח זה דבר של יצירה כמו שהרב אמר
אבל כוכבים זה לא ירח
זה היה חלק מהירח
אבל זה לא מחדש כמו הכוכב
לנחמה לירח
אתה מקבל
אותו
בזה לא חלק מהתחשות הירח
אז מה זה קשור, כוכבי השמיים? חשבתי שזה איכשהו קשור לירח, שזה קשור ליצירה. כי הוא אומר לו, אני מברך אותך שתרבה ו...
איך שאני... לא מסוים שאתה גלש בגלל זה.
אוקיי.
אתה יכול להסתכל על הקושן. עומר was bringing up the relationship of the ברוכה of ישראל compared to כוכבים many times. And Kochavim themselves not being part of the period of Yitchatshut, of the periodicity, and therefore the question is why particularly Kochavim. I mean, the way that I understood that is with the Rishonim who point out that the Kochavim were not part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's request in my separations. It never says, and God said, let there be Kochavim. So where did the Kochavim come from in my separation? it's a Forno, the Fiskuni, says that the Kochavim are byproducts. In other words, if you need to have an earth, and that, of course, is the focus of my separations for us, locally speaking, in order to have an earth, you have to have Kochavim, because there needs to be galaxies, and you'll need to have, see these galaxies as part of your having a local star, right? If there's local stars, then there have to be stars, and so on.
But the Pella is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says about these Kochavim, so you'd think that the byproducts have no meaning. Comes along the Pasuk to say that they're Kochavim, that Kulam B'Shemot Yikra, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows every star individually. In the same way that an astronomer has a chavivus to the stars that he knows and gives them names. Okay, an astronomer cannot keep it. So now you have NGC 1763-1978. Great. What a way to call a star, right? With its unique spectrum, its unique history, and so on and so forth. It's terrible. But to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows those things which appear to be mere byproducts, each one of them with the chashivas of a uniqueness and a particular relationship, that's the relationship to Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael looks like it's full of junk and the byproducts and people that would have no connection. But that's the kulam b'shemot yikra. That's why it's shmot. Begins with that rash, right? Shenim shalodiya yichavivatam lefadav. Shenim shalok kochavim. Shama ha-motzi b'mispar tzva'am. Why? Count. Know by name, byproducts. Because in essence, in this process, there aren't any real byproducts. The byproducts become part of the incredible story of creation itself. And it's wrong to relate to them as byproducts. So this is it's very interesting, because the Rambam, people think that they're stiras, the Midrashim. The Rambam talks about how foolish it is to think that the products of creation are for you. A butterfly is a butterfly because it's a butterfly, not because it's for you to be a butterfly. It has to be a butterfly, right? And it's everybody else in the Rambam, for, you know, I mean, even from the opening, the marble, they're all created for Adam. If there's no Adam, what do we need this? There's so many Midrashim that say not like that. Obviously, it's not a contradiction. In other words, the entire process, of course, is necessary in order for there to be, in the end, the ultimate complexity in that process. Mm-hmm. But each byproduct is not a byproduct. It's a product. That's what he's saying. You can't look back and say, ha, this is mine and I can screw up however I want. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says initially. Re'ei kama na'eh metukan. Look how beautiful this world is. It's all created for you. Watch out about ruining my world. That's contradiction in turn. You just said it's all for me, so let me do what I... No. It's all for you, but it's my world. Each element of it stands on its own. It's for you in the sense of you're the ultimate use. But don't mess up the whole thing. That's the point. The whole thing no longer may make sense if there's no usage at the end of intelligence. But what's there is there. It has to be appreciated for what it is. There's absolutely no contradiction between those two things. I think that's the way I understood it.
Is there a parallel between the Kochavim and the Kochol? Because we always say the two.
The what? The Kochol?
It's the same thing.
All right, gentlemen, let's do the theme. I made it up. I always make up these great things.
But that's Rebbe 30 years ago.
Maybe I knew I was going to get to this year one day, and I made it up then, so you would believe it. Which one?
About Yossi, about the matches, and why Lashon Hara. Rebbe doesn't want Lashon Hara.
What? What are you talking about?
What Lashon Hara? Why the Gemara uses examples of Lashon Hara where so-and-so always has matches.
Gemara Nerechen.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, of Lashon Hara, Rebbe said, it's Yom Sholit on. Rebbe said the exact same thing. It's
the language of evil.
No. Rebbe said that before the language of evil. Rebbe said there that it's, as soon as you show it, your two cents where they don't belong, that's the definition of Lashon Hara.
Insinuation.
Oh, right. That was the word. It was insinuation.
But Rebbe defined insinuation.
We use the word insinuation to mean to insert something there
that's not
that doesn't belong to.
Right.
You insinuate yourself into
it. Rebbe used the exact same Lashon as that.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful point. Okay. Right? Not quite as nice as malign and malignancy. Boy, that's incredible. That is insane. And how language, the chokhmah languages. The language itself is a perfect, I mean, it's not a metaphor, it's the same process in which you see complexity just becoming linked up in ways that nobody knows where it's coming from. And it's just, these words are just popping out and representing things that are just the most astonishing insights, and nobody ever thought of them.
Is there a way of ordering levels of complexity the way Cantor did with levels of infinity?
It's possible. It's possible, but boy, what a job. What a job. I mean, there's Kabbalistic elements of that. Discuss various ilamas. Each ilam is a different structure. Mm-hmm.
It's right. So lost there.
I mean, that's it's the basic four ilamas.
Yeah.
But that's how they view an ilam. In other words, every ilam has something called space, which is a mathematical, phase space, essentially. Something called times. It's possible to distinguish between when something is and when it's not, instead of everything just being there, which is the davar bi'ito, matov, and then some level of consciousness that integrates it, which is the nature of every ilam has the Sefer Yetzirah point. But that's a very big study. You have to first get straight what the terms mean. And again, that study can be done on any level of understanding the terminology. It's just that it's very primitive when it's done. It's not that some Sephardic Kabbalist, doesn't have any meaning in what he's doing. It's just very primitive. Because the initial understanding is so limited of what is meant by these. Sometimes it's just entirely metaphorical and therefore loses any real connection with reality. It's the new levels of understanding of details of meaning. That's where the devil's in the details, or God is in the details. And just to discuss the different levels is not necessarily meaningful until you have down what you mean by that. That's one of the reasons that it's so devastating for people to engage in these types of studies when it literally doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter whether it's on the level of what they call spirituality and Kabbalah, or even if it's on the level of reading early Rishonim and not being able to translate it into words that mean something. If you're still living in the Middle Ages, it doesn't matter how advanced something was for its time, it's just meaningless. It doesn't say anything to us. Its structure is no longer useful. Its metaphorical content is no longer useful. And that's why it's so, so important to get down basic yesodos, and then you can play these games. But as the Mishnah says, they're all of this stuff is just parparos. It's all the frosting on the cake. Getting down your basic understanding is what it is, what it's really all about, and that can be very, very simple things without a complex structure. But the ideas themselves need to be so well defined that the structure almost creates itself in the end.
So you got Moshe in the Academy of Akiva, and there's this interplay between
right.
And what from whom.
Exactly. That's very much one. This is one of the terrible mistakes that people make. They think that, because you can quote some sefer that was written 200 years ago, that necessarily it's relevant. It's the wrong thought process. Even the Nevi'im were carefully chosen out of 600,000 or 1,200,000 Nevi'im, according to Amman D'Omer. The Kiflayim, Kiyotzei Mitzrayim, the Roimit for Yisrael, a handful were chosen because their message retains contemporary value. And generally speaking, I mean, that's the incredible, I think that's the universally acknowledged uniqueness of the Bible and the classics. Is that they're dealing with such primal elements that it remains meaningful to every generation, which can now see the issues that they're talking about all linked up to these very, very simple narratives But there are narratives that are so well put together that they contain the meaning that you'll find in your particular time space, and it becomes newly powerful. That's
the major question. Was really yesterday about the Roei Hatzon and taking care of themselves instead of taking care of the Tzon, and brought me to tears. Just thinking about today's situation.
Okay, time for our theme.
It's a little sidetrack, which I waited, but he wants to mention that Tolkien only made up the names and the story wrote itself.
Yeah.
He used to find the name.
He wrote that, yeah. How is that?
But he was saying beforehand, how he just had meaning to be very grounded in the issues and the story
wrote
itself.
Not quite the same thing, yeah.